What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line I have my pick and pop partner, Josh Cohen. How you doing?
Doing all right, and you?
Feeling good. Feeling very good today. Rajan Walia, the banger in the paint, how you feeling?
Not too bad. I think we're 1 month out before NBA season begins to start.
3 weeks, actually.
Oh, wow.
What?
Josh has the countdown going.
It's 3 weeks training camp?
Now, I listened to a podcast today, and they were like, it's 3 weeks away from the first preseason game. I'm like, holy crap, the summer went by quick.
From what? From preseason?
Yeah.
God damn, that means training camp is in like 2 weeks? No way.
Something like that.
Who said this?
Which Maybe podcast? They're wrong. I don't know. I'm going to go check now, actually.
Which podcast are you listening to?
It was the Ringer podcast.
Oh, I trust them. I lied. I take it back. Anyways, let's get started. We're going to continue with our over and unders today, and we're going to move west. So we're using the current Westgate odds as of September 4th. And first on the docket, we have your Memphis Grizzlies sitting at 27.5 wins.
Yeah, Memphis had quite the off season. They changed over a lot of their team. Obviously, they're in a full rebuild, and you know, much like talking about the last episode with the Knicks, I think they actually did it the right way. So to go through the transactions, we'll start off with Jonas Valanciunas. He re-signed. I think it was on a 3-year deal, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
Yes, and then they obviously drafted Ja Morant at number 2. Fellow Canadian Brandon Clark at number 21. Who looks like a steal. And they added a lot of players, and a lot of these players are not going to be on the team come probably February, if not sooner. Dwight Howard, who's now with the Lakers. Andre Iguodala, who knows what's going to happen with him, obviously. Josh Jackson decided to come from whichever concert he was at that day to the Memphis Grizzlies.
Oh, wow.
Grayson Allen. Jay Crowder is going to be a major trade target for somebody. De'Anthony Melton came from the Suns. They signed Tyus Jones, and they acquired Solomon Hill and Miles Plumlee, and they lost a bunch of players as well. Mike Conley got traded to the Jazz, obviously. DeLon Wright signed with the Mavericks. Avery Bradley's now gone to the Lakers. CJ Miles is with the Wizards. Chandler Parsons went to the Hawks in a trade. Javon Carter's gone. Julian Washburn, whoever that is also gone.
That's a lot to digest.
It is, and they probably have, you know what, 6, maybe 7 quality NBA players in this team, so they're probably going to be the worst or second worst team in this.
Yeah, I definitely think they're going to be in the bottom. I know we're going to get to them later, but I think the Grizzlies just at the 27.5. I think that number is pretty high based off of last year's win total of 33. They came out of the gate pretty hot. I think they were the number one team in the NBA after like 10 games or something last year. But I think they're going to get nowhere close to 27.5. Like, this is kind of like another Hornets situation where they're just going to be in rebuild. However, they're doing it right. They're definitely going under. I think this is probably one of the nicest lines going into this season.
Did you know that Bruno Caboclo is still on this team and essentially he had a very good game against Giannis yesterday? I just want to show some love
Bruno
to Bruno.
The savior.
Bruno's looking nice during the summer, man. He's 2 years from being 2 years from being arrived.
I just want to say that I've always been a Bruno backer. I just want to make that point clear. Like, he's going to be an NBA player for 10 plus years.
10 years?
Yeah, I mean, the guy's, what, 6'9"? He's got the longest arms in the NBA besides, like, Rudy Gobert. And he's starting to shoot the three pretty well. And he plays pretty good defense now. And, like, in the second half of last year, he actually showed a decent off-the-dribble game. I mean, decent from where he was before, which is non-existent, but, you know.
His game is really reliant on his athleticism, though. You know what I mean? Like, his defense is all athleticism, which, for most guys, it is. So as long as he can stay healthy, maintains it as he grows a bit older, he'll be good.
And he's going to get playing time, too, in Memphis. Like, they have the right formula with a lot of young guys who have a lot to prove. In terms of, like, teams on the bottom that have a bright future, if they keep their players, I think in 3 years or maybe 2 years from 2 years, like, they might be good as a team. But I think the Grizzlies are unfortunately not going to be anywhere close to getting 27 and a half wins this year. I think they're going to get more close to like 20.
So I think the biggest question for this team outside of, you know, Ja Morant becoming a possible great point guard in the NBA is I think that their big situation is pretty decent right now, but the question with them, I think, is Jaren Jackson going to be the next superstar? Is he going to be the guy for this team? And he has all the tools to do so, but will he put it together? And defensively, he was amazing last year. But offensively, he still has some work to do. His three-point shot's pretty good. And his post-game developed over the course of the year, but can he become that like next-level guy? Instead of being like an Al Horford, he's going to be not Anthony Davis, obviously, but somewhere just below that tier.
Well, according to some media personalities, he's the next Tim Duncan, Josh.
Whew. All right, like, let's calm down here. I think more interesting. More interesting for the Grizzlies.
Tim Duncan, who's like top five all time.
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing with the Grizzlies is how well Ja Morant's going to be. I won't be surprised if he has less of an impact than Trae Young did. Trae Young obviously had a great year last year. I don't think Morant, with the team he has now, is going to be as efficient. But again, like, all these young players are going to get lots of minutes, opportunities to shine. They won't have that pressure of having to perform and get wins right away. So as a team, they might be fun to watch, but they're not going to put up wins.
I hope they make Andre Iguodala stay on this roster too. Make him burn there.
Absolutely.
Have him really suffer.
No way.
I think if that happens, I think he's going to retire.
Good. Still salty, man. Still salty. All right, let's move on. Josh, you're going under on this, I'm assuming.
I'll be the contrarian. I'm going to go over. What's the total again?
27 and a half?
Oh, God.
In the West?
Oh, God.
There's no way.
No way. Please correct yourself.
Hey, Ja Morant's going to be great next year. Jaren Jackson's going to take the next step. They're going to win a bunch of games in February and March against these teams that just give up. Yes, over.
Wow.
Let's do this, Memphis.
Oh my God. This guy
JB's
really
my
loves,
guy.
Really loves his barbecue out here. Jesus Christ.
Absolutely.
Let's go to Josh Jackson's former team, the Phoenix Suns, Josh.
Ugh, do we have to?
Hey, you want to talk about teams that are going to quit in the second half? This team might quit in the first half.
So they signed Ricky Rubio for way too much money. They traded for Dario Saric, Aaron Baines, Javon Carter. They signed a gentleman named Jalen Lech. Chek Diallo signed there as well. And Frank Kaminsky also signed for, I think, the room exception for like $5 million, which didn't make any sense. And speaking of not making sense, they also drafted Cameron Johnson after trading down at the number 11 pick, and the guy is like 24 years old. And they also drafted Ty Jerome, which was acquired in a trade with the Celtics. They lost Troy Daniels, the aforementioned Josh Jackson, DeAnthony Melton, TJ Warren. They gave him up for absolutely nothing. They waived Kyle Korver once they acquired him, and then Rashawn Holmes went to the Kings, and they re-signed Kelly Oubre for a decent amount of money, but he's a good player.
I love when you just rip on random players. Frank, why the hell is Frank Kaminsky getting $5 million a year?
I don't get it. I mean, they traded down to get Saric, I guess, and Saric is like the rich man's version of Kaminsky. So why get Kaminsky too?
So he can come off the bench because Aaron Baines isn't enough. Hello.
Yeah, this team's basically traded for Aaron Baines to like get his contract in the cap space when they could have just used the cap space on something else. Like, I like Aaron Baines, but he's more of a player that fits on a contender. He's not a player that's going to really succeed in a rebuilding situation.
No, he's going to get traded, right?
You would think so, but you think that would have happened already. Like, why acquire him in the first place? You could have just waived him and saved the money.
Who was in his trade?
Or did they just trade him for draft pick? With the Celtics with one of the picks. So I think they acquired Ty Jerome in that trade as well. He's number 24 pick.
Damn, the Celtics could have used him
player
right
as
now.
Well in that trade.
Why did the Celtics let him go?
Yeah, they needed depth at the center position.
I think it was so they can sign Kemba Walker. They had to free up some money.
Yeah. Well, damn. Poor Aaron Baines. I would not wish that on anybody to be on this team.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for him.
So is this Suns team better than last year's version?
Yes.
Like on paper?
Yeah.
I don't know.
They got Aaron Baines. Well, they also have a
solid argument.
They also have a real point guard in Ricky Rubio now. Obviously, he's getting way overpaid, but at the same time, he's a real point guard, right? Like, they're not running. Last year, they had Devin Booker playing point guard for half the year. They had Tyler Johnson playing point guard. Both these guys are not actual point guards. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I don't know. I look at this roster and just the players they added, and I don't know which direction they're going. Like, they added a lot of fringe NBA roster players when they really should have been looking to add, like, possibly starters or really good depth guys who have well-defined roles. Like, yeah, I like the Dario Saric pickup, but especially because they lost a lot of like players that were giving them, I'd say, decent minutes, and they didn't really upgrade. So I don't know if the Suns are actually better, and Ricky Rubio is like the model of inconsistency throughout his NBA career. So I don't know if they went forward. I think maybe this is a step sideways, maybe not a step back, but I think their win total is 29.5, and I don't know. That's a pretty high total. That's a high total for the Suns. Like, that's almost winning 50% of your games, or like 40%.
Last year,
the one thing they have going for them though is last year when they actually had a full roster and they had, you know, all the NBA players that they had actually playing games, they were almost like even in net rating overall. So, I mean, Kelly Oubre being added to the bunch in the second half of the year, Ricky Rubio being a secondary ball handler out there for Devin Booker, and another guy that can actually get DeAndre Ayton the ball. I think that's going to be key. I think Aiden's going to have a big year with Rubio wanting to feed him because Rubio just doesn't want to shoot anymore. But as much as I like Rubio, I think he has taken a step back the last 2 years. He's just not as quick. Even though he's more aggressive, it's hard to get less aggressive than what he was before, but he'll help his team, but I just don't see them making any type of jump. And it seems like based on what they did in the offseason and getting like guys like Aaron Baines that they were trying to actually win this year, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah, remember last year when they did that with Tyson Chandler and Trevor Ariza? Everyone's like, oh my god, Phoenix is going to win a lot of games. They're going to go 500. Nah. Relax.
Yeah, that backfired.
Yeah, Trevor Ariza was not the X factor for this team. Who knew?
Yeah, you can't get like really good role players for teams that are really looking to build, and maybe winning isn't the biggest priority for them now. Like, getting players like Trevor Ariza, Andre Iguodala, like, these players are near the end of their careers. Like, they have well-defined roles. They give you exactly what you want, but they're not going to give you anything extra. And you can't play them for like 35 minutes a game.
Yeah, I think the logic is just to get some professionals around the young players, right? So you don't want guys who are near the end of their career, because obviously young players won't listen to them the same way. But you want guys that can actually contribute at the same time. That's why, like, the logic between Iguodala or guys like Rubio and Ariza is that they can still put something out on the court. And they should be able to, you know, lead these guys in the locker room, so to speak.
I'm going to say it now, easy. I think they're going to win 25 games. I think they'll be better. In terms of just wins, because hopefully Devin Booker stays healthy this year. But 25 wins, and I think that's a pretty good season for the Suns.
I just want somebody to explain to me why they made that draft day deal where they moved down from 7 to, what was it, 13? No, 11, sorry. And they obviously picked up Saric in that deal. But now you have to decide whether you're going to actually extend Saric because he's a free agent, or restricted free agent, coming up this summer. So why move down for a player that you may or may not re-sign and then draft a 24-year-old?
Yeah, you want the honest truth?
Yes.
It's because Dragan Bender is no longer on the team, so they needed a European big man.
That's, you know, exactly it. Gotta fill up the seats.
Exactly. Gotta hit those quotas, man.
You know, I am excited that Dragan Bender is now with Giannis. He's going to turn him into a player.
Okay, Josh, what do you think about this team? Come on. Let's get this over with.
Under.
Done. You want to move on to your new favorite team, Josh? Do you know where I'm going with this?
The Clippers?
No. Come on,
we're going bottom to top here.
Your favorite team.
I didn't realize Toronto switched to the West.
They did, in the form of the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Oh, yes.
31.5 31.
So Oklahoma had the most surprising offseason.
No kidding.
So with Oklahoma, they obviously traded for Chris Paul and the Russell Westbrook deal. They also got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in the trade with the Clippers. Danilo Gallinari and Mike Muscala signed, and they gave him the option to, you know, basically opt out of that contract and go back on the free agency market, and he decided that he wanted to stay in Oklahoma. Typical for a white guy. They drafted Darius Bazley, who has his own interesting story, not going to college. They lost Paul George, obviously, Russell Westbrook. Jeremy Grant got traded to the Nuggets. And Markieff Morris left to sign with the Pistons. And they re-signed Nerlens Noel on a cheap contract.
Is Bazley the one who just sat out the year to train?
Yeah, and I think he was interning at like New Balance or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how he could get his $1 million like sponsorship.
Hey, good for him, man. Yeah. Get your money.
He got paid by more than any other college player ever did.
True. True. So this team is kind of wonky now, to say the least.
This team is interesting. Like, they have a pretty good backcourt, I think, with Chris Paul and Shai. And Danilo still, he had a great year last year, and he actually stayed healthy somewhat. And Steven Adams is still good. I mean, their bench is very limited, obviously, but their starting lineup is actually pretty decent.
I want to see Steven Adams without Russ. Like, imagine all the rebounds he'll actually get this year.
He's not going to know what to do with it. I think he's going to, like, bobble a bunch of balls out of bounds, especially in the free throw rebounds.
He's going to be like, oh my God, I thought someone was coming in to get it. Nope, just you, Stevie.
Who's or he's going to, like, defiantly smack the ball out of bounds because he's not used to actually catching it.
Who's going to start at the four for this team? Muscala? Ugh. Seriously, I can't see who else it would be.
Don't they still have Diallo?
Well, it's going to be Danilo, right?
Then who's at the three?
No, I think he's a four now. He's, what, 30, 31 years old?
He's 31.
Yeah. Like he's so a you're four starting, now, I think.
So you have Chris Paul and Shai in the backcourt. Who's your three? Terrence Ferguson?
I think if Roberson comes back, he's probably
Roberson,
your three.
Yeah.
Ah, yes. Is he healthy?
Who knows? You better hope so. He went through some shit, man. Like, I think his knee exploded, what, twice in the last 2 years?
Something like that, yeah. That dude. Look, I can't catch a break, man. How about this? What if Oklahoma City Thunder's medical staff isn't up to par? How about that? Why do they keep getting injured, all their guys?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with kind of the way they play. They play really physical, and obviously we're talking a lot about Russ, and I think...
No, but they also... Like only, sorry, they also like so rushed back Durant from his Jones fracture. They rushed back Westbrook. Paul George, like, isn't that actually physical of a player? And he's now taking two shoulder surgeries in the offseason.
Yeah, but there's also an argument that could be made that Durant doesn't know his body well based off of the last injury he suffered. Westbrook has that tough guy attitude, wants to play through any type of injury. And just talking about Roberson, like those are freak injuries. The Paul George thing is interesting, but he has shoulder problems from before his OKC days. And they're pretty well documented. I think he elected to avoid surgery before that, and now it's time where he had double shoulder surgery, and we'll see what that affects his shot or his rhythm. But I can't blame the training staff. I don't see the pattern.
I can't wait for Chris Paul and Danilo Gallinari to get hurt this year so I can say this again. Even though they're both like highly injury-prone players, I'm just going to blame it on the training staff anyways.
The one exciting thing for this team, though, is, you know, if Chris Paul does end up getting traded in February, it becomes Shai's team. And I think while Chris Paul is there, he's going to be able to show Shai, like, the tricks of the trade, I think. And then having Steven Adams pick for you is going to be a very valuable tool for a very young point guard who's just learning how to play the pick and roll and, you know, played really well last year. And he played quality minutes in the playoffs too. So hopefully Shea, as our fellow Canadian, will be the next one, the next great point guard.
Do you really think Chris Paul wants to be a mentor though? No, like seriously.
I don't think he does, but I think he's going to see a point guard that sort of came into the league the same way Chris Paul did, you know, as a young player on a pretty good team and a playoff team in New Orleans. I think they weren't the playoff team the first year, but the second year I think they were.
Yeah.
But he had a bunch of like veteran players around him, much like Shea did the first year. And, you know, Shea has the talent, just a matter of figuring out the NBA and then obviously adding a three-point shot.
But what's that have to do with Chris Paul being a leader, though? Like, Chris Paul doesn't seem like the kind of guy who wants to mentor young players. You know, like, he never showed that in the past.
I think he has to in order for him to get traded, I think, this year. Because Oklahoma's not going to want to take back a bad salary or have to give away draft picks in order to get rid of him. So if he plays well and then he mentors Shea and all these, you know, different narratives come out about Chris Paul being a great teammate happen, then maybe a team like Miami comes calling again.
Yeah, I guess. That could be a theory.
Or maybe a team like Orlando that doesn't really have a point guard decides to try to go for it and trades for Chris Paul. You never know.
Man, they're going to be shelling out $40 million for a 35-year-old or 34-year-old.
You know, somebody's going to do it, though. I don't think he's going to stay on this team until April.
Yeah, I totally agree. Once I saw Blake Griffin's contract being moved, now I think that any contract can be moved.
Yeah, with the right amount of picks. And
exactly. So, like, someone will take prospects. It.
Yeah. But the Oklahoma City Thunder's win total is heavily inflated. 31.5. And even if Chris Paul does stay on this team, I think that is a high total for them. For a team that is probably going to have some time to figure out its identity. Like, they're going to play hard, but they don't really have as much depth. They don't have well-defined roles. And then obviously the uncertainty about their future like makes me feel like this is probably going to be the worst team in the West.
I can't see that unless they trade him like very early in the season. I think this team is most likely out of the bottom three to actually go over their win total.
So you actually think they'll go over 31.5?
It depends how long they keep Chris Paul for, but you have a good starting lineup and you have a lot of veteran players that are still really good. So out of the three teams we've talked about so far, I think Oklahoma's the one team you look at out of these three that you just say, like, this team could win 35 games.
You're very optimistic. I do know what you mean. I just don't buy it. I don't think that they'll keep all the pieces that they have right now.
I mean, if you look at the rosters, like, they have four really good players. And then you compare that to Memphis, who has maybe two right now that are defined. And then
Do you mean four really good players?
What's that?
He's talking about Chris Paul.
okay, yeah, Chris Paul, Stephen Adams, Shea, Gallinari.
Stephen Adams, Danilo.
You're calling Shea a very good player?
I think he's going to be very good next year. I think he was good last year, so why not make a jump? I don't see why he can't.
I just think he's a good player. I don't think he's very good. Maybe our understanding of the term very good is very different. How about that?
I don't know. I mean, for a rookie, he's a pretty complete player for a rookie. So I think he's going to make a major jump this year.
Yes. You're on the tip. We get it. This team has all the writing for you to be on the tip of. A Canadian point guard. Your favorite point guard of all time. Like a New Zealander, you know.
If only they drafted Brandon Clark. Damn.
So you're going over on this team?
Yeah.
31.5.
I don't know.
It's hard to say
slight under just because Chris Paul's going to get traded at some point.
I think they end up around 28.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. I could also see it the opposite way where they just keep Chris Paul for the entire year because they can't trade him and then they win like 36 games and they might be in the discussion for the 8th seed at some point in the year.
No. I'm just going to say no, and they're going to win 25 games. Chris Paul will get traded. They're going to be probably tied with the Suns.
Okay, so hold on. You have three teams that are going to be under 25 wins in the West, right?
Yep.
That means we're going to have a top-heavy West then, I guess, with all these inflated win totals.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, I think there's going to be at least 5 or 6 teams with 50 wins.
Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. Super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. Remember when this team could have made 50 wins, Josh, like 2 years ago? The Minnesota Timberwolves?
Yeah, I mean, you talk about a team that might just tank this year. I'm surprised their win total is more than OKC.
35.5.
I mean, you talk about a pretty high win total. So we'll go through the roster transactions. So Trevion Graham got traded to Minnesota, as well as Jake Lehman in a trade with the Blazers, Shabazz Napier in a trade with the Warriors. They signed Noah Vonleh for almost nothing, which is a nice deal for them. They claimed Tyrone Wallace off waivers from the Clippers. They signed Jordan Bell for another very cheap contract, and they signed Naz Reid. And they drafted Jared Culver with a number 6 pick via the Suns. And Jalen Nolan at the 43rd pick. And they lost a lot of their veteran talent, with Taj Gibson going to the Knicks, Tyus Jones going to the Grizzlies, Cameron Reynolds got waived. Derrick Rose went to the Pistons, Saric got traded to the Suns, obviously, and then Anthony Tolliver went to the Blazers.
So this team is kind of meh. Talk about a meh team.
Yeah, like I would say it's like the average NBA team.
Yeah.
I
think they're like the Miami Heat of the West.
I mean, that's just factoring in that Andrew Wiggins actually shows up and plays a few games this year, but I don't know. I'm not even sure that's going to happen.
Will Andrew Wiggins show up more for the Minnesota Timberwolves than he did for Team Canada this summer?
You better hope so.
Does Karl-Anthony Towns learn how to play defense?
I think Kat is like an average defender. I think a lot of people are taking that whole narrative too far.
Yeah, he's okay. I mean, he's a little bit slow on his reads. That's his issue, and it's always been his issue.
Yeah, and he's what, a fifth-year player?
Is he a fifth year? I don't know. He's 23. So whatever that means.
This is probably his fifth year.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, big men often take at least 5 years to get all the different intricacies of NBA defense. So he has all the talent in the world, and he's got quick feet too. So, I mean, you put defensive players around this guy, I don't see why he can't be, not Joel Embiid, obviously, but he can at least be a defensive anchor that's not bad.
No. We're not going to say that he's a good defender because he has good defensive teammates.
No, I'm just saying that's, you don't put, easy, like, scrubs around him that just, you know, guys, they're basically like pylons out there. You don't put those types of players around him and expect him to, like, make up for all the mistakes. He's not that type of player. He's not the Kemba Mutombo.
No, I was going to say KG or Anthony Davis, but yeah, you're right. He's not going to be able to anchor a defense individually. But he can be a major part of a good defense, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, you get like more players like Covington around him and less players like Andrew Wiggins. You might have something there.
It's a shame they're stuck with both. Meh. What do you think of their point guard situation? They only have Jeff Teague, Shabazz Napier off the bench. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, a lot of people were giving them a hard time at the draft for not drafting one of the point guards that was available at the time and instead drafting Culver, who I think is a shooting guard or a small forward. And they don't really seem to have any type of plan to have elite ball handler type as of right now. But if Cat gets hurt at any point this year, they're going to have to seriously look at, you know, drafting somebody, obviously. Or, you know, they could have gone in free agency or gone in the trade market and gotten somebody.
Maybe Jared Culver promised that he would be really good for the team.
I think he's going to be a good player for them. I don't think he's going to fit that point guard role. But this Timberwolves team just like screams mediocrity. Obviously, they have the perennial underperformer of the year on their team, so that's not going to be... I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. But this team, like, their point guard issue was kind of an issue last year. Derrick Rose obviously stepped up and gave them really good minutes down the stretch.
In 50 games.
Yeah, but still...
50 big games.
Yeah, great production from the backup point guard spot. This, like, looking at their win total, what's their total, Peter?
35.5. Last year they had 36. So basically the exact same thing.
Yeah, like I could see them having a very similar season. I think just their team without the Jimmy Butler drama of the start of last season might win a few more games early on and beat up on some of the bad teams in the West. But like I think they're going to go over, but I wouldn't be surprised if they win 36 games or 37 games this year.
Like, the only reason why their win total is this high is because Cat never gets injured. I mean, outside of that, would you really take their starting lineup over OKC's? Yeah, probably not, right?
I would.
You would?
Yeah, I would.
Oof. Wait, aside from Cat or with Cat?
With Cat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sorry, I misunderstood. Yeah, of course with Cat, of course.
Really?
Yes, especially. Yeah, because you don't know how long Chris Paul's going to be there. First and second, I think they have better pieces around them and more depth.
I mean, they have some depth, but these guys are not consistent performers anyway. Like guys like Jake Layman and Shabazz Napier, they'll show up every couple games and give you like 15 points. But I mean, it's still better than what OKC has, obviously. But starting lineup wise, yeah. I'd still take OKC's starting lineup over this starting lineup, mostly because of Wiggins.
You just really hate Wiggins, and you love Shea. Maybe that's a problem.
Yeah.
Why isn't Shea playing for Team Canada? Is he hurt?
No, I think after the trade, I think OKC just sort of shut him down.
What? What do you mean?
You get to decide told him not if to you play. Play. It was one of those situations, like the USA SGA. Players backing out, saying they got to get ready for the season.
Yo, that's a... I hate that so much.
I think most of the time when players get traded to new teams... the teams want to get their trainers with the guy to see what he's doing in the off season and make sure that they're on the right path. So
only some of them do that though. It depends on the team, right? And it depends on the player to actually want to do this kind of thing. Like you see guys like
do it.
Well, sometimes yeah, but there are also guys like Devin Booker complaining that he's getting double teamed in a pickup game. You know what I mean? Like, sure, work on your offensive game, but. You're just playing against like lots of good lackadaisical defense. Come on, man. I hate that.
Yeah. But I mean, for this roster, they do have some good young players on the team and guys that could develop into something. I like Noah Vonleh last year. I think he actually played pretty well. And I've always been a fan of Jordan Bell. So I'm hoping that he, you know, works his way into the starting lineup and him and Kat work together because he's actually a really good passer. And defensively, like when he actually played extended minutes, he was really good. Like some people were comparing him to Draymond the first 3 years in the league.
Yeah, but I think it was just an easy comparison to make just based off of their body, like their body types and kind of they don't really have much of an offensive game, so they have to facilitate and
being on the same team.
Exactly. but like, again, this team is, I think, like an average NBA team. Like they can put up a fight against most of the teams in the NBA. They may not win as many games. Because they don't have the top-end talent. But unless they make any big changes, I can see them just winning like 36, 37. Like you might as well just run their whole season replay of last year and see how well they do and probably get the same outcome this year.
Yeah, I'm a slight over as well.
I'm going under, but I do hope they trade for D'Angelo Russell at the trade deadline since they didn't get him in the offseason.
That'd be fun. That'd be very fun. All right, let's move on to the next team. The Sacramento Kings are sitting at 38 wins, last year's league pass darling.
Yeah, so the Kings added a lot of depth to their roster and a lot of sort of overlapping players for positions they already had filled. So they signed Trevor Ariza. Dwayne Dedmon's now their starting center. Corey Joseph's their backup point guard. Rashawn Holmes is their third big off the bench, and center position anyway. And Tyler Lydon agreed to sign as well. And they drafted Justin James, Kyle Guy, and Vanya Marinkovic. Thank you. Thank you.
Good job. Bravo.
They also lost Willie Cauley-Stein, Alec Burks, and Frank Mason, and they re-signed Harrison Barnes to the worst contract signed in the offseason.
That's a bit harsh. I think maybe the Corey Joseph signing may have been worse.
No, he's Canadian, so he's cool.
Get out of here, man. Come on.
Who are you talking to, me or him?
You.
Me?
Josh. Get out of here.
You actually think Harrison Barnes is an above-average player?
I think he's better than Corey Joseph.
Yeah, but sure, but Corey Joseph's on a contract that's like, I mean, it's, what, 2 or 3 years, and it's at $11 million a year, which is pretty bad, but you're playing Harrison Barnes like $20-plus million a year for what?
Yeah, but you're paying Corey Joseph $12 million-plus for what?
Yeah, but you're comparing a starter with a guy who's only going to play like 20 minutes a game max, right? Like, Harrison Barnes is supposed to be one of your top three players, and if Harrison Barnes is one of your top three players, you're not going to be a good team.
Mm-hmm. But they have the depth with Trevor Ariza right behind.
Also, we're assuming that they want to be a good team.
Oh, they do. 100%.
Yeah, they do.
You don't think they want to be good this year?
You don't assume that.
I know, you're right.
If you don't assume that, Peter, you don't like NBA basketball.
Touche, touche. Yeah, I agree. Harrison Barnes is not worth $20 million, but I don't think Corey Joseph is worth $12.5 either.
Yeah, but Harrison Barnes is signed for, what, 4 years?
Yeah.
And Joseph signed for, I think, two, and the third year is not guaranteed, or not all guaranteed.
Yeah, that is correct.
So, it's apples and oranges, man. Like, I don't get why you sign, like, the most average small forward in the NBA. Who doesn't do anything particularly well to that much money.
He's got championship pedigree.
In a finals where he didn't even show up. Especially the second one where they lost. Oh my God, he was so
bad. He's a winner. NBA champion Harrison Barnes, all right? Put some respect on that name.
Give me Bjelica over Harrison Barnes.
Yo, Bjelica is going to eat his way out of the league soon, man.
He is a big boy.
Yeah. So we're expecting more of the same from last year, right? Lots of run and gun from this team. A slightly better defense now that they got some more depth and some veteran presence with Ariza, Joseph, and Dedmon.
Yeah, and there's going to be more minutes with Bagley, which I think he's going to have a nice career if he manages to stay healthy. I think last year he had a very slow start to the year, but when he did play, he was averaging like close to a double-double. I could see the Kings actually having a better season than last year. I don't think substantially better, but I think they'll win more games. Their win total is 38, and I can see them winning close to 41.
The thing they have to figure out, though, is like who's going to play? There's a lot of guys in this roster you would think that are going to play minutes on this team. I think they have, what, 11 or 12 guys in total that you would think they're going to play at least like 15 minutes a game. And their power forward position is just like stacked with guys that their best position is now power forward. Like Ariza, he's getting up there in age, obviously. He's, what, 36 years old. Harrison Barnes is better as a four. Bjelica played the four last
Ariza's
year.
Ariza's 34.
34? He plays like he's 38. And then you have Harry Giles, who played center last year. He's going back and forth with Bagley, obviously. And then Bagley's going to start at the four with Dedmon at the center. So you just have a lot of guys clumped into the front court. And then in the back court, you have, I don't know. I don't think their back court is great. They have Fox, who I think is going to break out this year, obviously. I'm not a big fan of Buddy Hield. And Bogdanovich is my guy. I just hope that he plays more. But again, on this roster where you have like so much depth, they sort of remind me of like the Grizzlies way back when, where they had like 10 deep. Guys that are going to, play 20 minutes each. And then you got Fox, who's just going to be the star.
Buddy Hield's like 40 years old, right? It's kind of hard to tell what he's going to be.
Yeah. He's also got the horse teeth, too.
Wow.
He's actually had a good year, so I can't hate
him. He was shooting really well. I don't know if he's able to keep it going, though.
Yeah, but
those are like some astronomical numbers last year that he had.
Yeah, and they had I feel their team didn't get worse this offseason. They picked up, obviously, Ariza, and now that Bagley's going to be a starter, I think they're going to get better production or consistent production out of him and probably a bit better defense than they had with Willie Cauley-Stein. And I think this team is like just more experienced. They haven't had any big changes. Like, I think they're going to be considerably better than the OKCs and the Phoenixes and the Grizzlies. And I think they're a good challenge for most NBA teams just because their pace is so hard to match.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, yeah. The one thing they do have is they have an identity in being one of the fastest teams in the NBA, just running it up and down the court. But I just think that the glut that they have in the front court is going to become an issue. I think that certain guys, when they're not getting minutes on certain nights, it's going to create an issue in the locker room. And I don't know. I think there's going to be issues there with who's going to play what position and sort of slotting guys into positions they're not comfortable with. For example, with Harrison Barnes playing the three a lot more because you have so many guys that need to play the four. Same idea with Ariza. And I think that's going to make them worse overall in terms of like lineup continuity.
So you're going under? 38.
I mean, they should be better, obviously, with that much more depth. But I do think the minutes issue is going to be prevailing. So I'm going to say under.
Damn. Raj? You said over?
Yeah, I'm going with over.
I am also going with an over. I think they, because they just slightly get better this year. Last year they had 39 wins. I'm going to say they hover around like 39-40 again. Slight improvement in all like the major players. And then obviously the veterans have to take more of a bench role, which is very surprising from guys like Trevor Ariza, who I thought would still try to, you know, kick around a little bit longer, but he's getting paid, so good for him.
I just think they should have stayed on their trajectory from last year and not signed all these veteran guys who need minutes. A guy like Harry Giles should be playing like 25 minutes a game next year, like consistently. And now he's going to have to fight for minutes with four guys. So I just don't understand what they did
in the offseason. With like Deadman and... No, all he has to do is fight with Deadman and Bagley.
Bielitsa too, and then Bagley's going to play center at some point.
Yo, Bielitsa's not going to play much. You know that, right? Yeah, he's not going to play.
And then again, he got Barnes at the four, so I don't know. There's too many guys.
Last year, Bielitsa was barely playing towards the end of the year. He's out.
I think he's going to be an important player on a playoff team this year, though.
Yeah, if they trade him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. The New Orleans Pelicans are estimated to get 39 wins with this young-ass team. Essentially the Los Angeles Lakers 2.0. Last year they had 33.
So they had Alonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, J.J. Redick, Derek Favors, Josh Hart, and Nicolo Melli. And they drafted Zion, obviously, Jackson Hayes. Another fellow Canadian, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, who showed out in the Summer League. Marcos Luzada Silva. And they obviously lost Anthony Davis, Solomon Hill, biggest scrub in the NBA. Alfred Payton, Julius Randle, Stanley Johnson, Chet Diallo, my guy Christian Wood, and Davis Bertans.
Davis Bertans?
Oh, sorry, Darius Bertans.
I had to register that one for a second there. All right, so basically, do we think that this team being led by the young Lakers will carry them to 39 wins behind Zion?
I'm just curious as to what you guys think they're going to do with the backcourt. Are they going to start J.J. Redick with Holiday, or are they going to start Lonzo Ball?
They have to start Lonzo, right?
But don't you think that J.J. wouldn't have signed there unless he was guaranteed a starting spot?
I don't think he cares as long as he gets paid.
Yeah. Mm.
Redick has made it very clear that he just wants his paychecks. And he wants to be on a young team, apparently.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they really had like two starting lineups. Like,
what do you mean?
Like they might start with Lonzo and Drew Holiday, but then JJ comes in for Lonzo, and then when Drew sits, Lonzo sits. Like, they might, as a starter, Lonzo and Drew would start together, but I think they would just be playing, like, not on the court very much together, like, less than 10 minutes a game together, just because I think they really want to see how well he does, and especially because they also have, like, Alexander Walker, who's also a primary ball handler. On that team.
Who's not going to play, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, he's going to struggle with minutes. Just they do have a bit of an issue in the backcourt. But I think that Brandon Ingram is going to probably end up playing the three. They don't really have much depth behind him. And then they have a lot of players actually at the 4-5, obviously with Zion, Okafor, Derek Favors, and Jackson Hayes. So I think it's really going to come down to Lonzo Ball and Holiday playing, like starting, but like they're going to just play point guard. Like one guy plays with one unit for like 5-6 minutes and then switching. And yeah.
Yo, shout out to Jahlil Okafor. My man. Still
keeping
getting
that
paid.
Roster spot.
Yeah.
Keeping that bench nice and warm.
So what do they do with the front court? Favors and Williamson?
Yeah, I think you have to. Yeah. They can't really go another way unless they want to go just like super young and just start Hayes out of the gate, which I don't think they're going to do. I think the whole...
That'd be insane.
Yeah, I think the whole idea with what David Griffin's doing is mixing the young talent with the veteran players so the veteran players can teach the young talent.
Yeah.
I think as the year goes on and they possibly make some trades, you know, to get these veterans, get some value for them come February. Like they actually have some veteran players that can trade for first round picks, unlike a lot of these teams that either acquired or signed veteran guys in New York. So like a guy like Derek Favors can really help a playoff team, JJ Redick as well. So if they decide just to go like blow it up mode in February and just play Lonzo Ball and Ingram as many minutes with Zion as they can and see what they have, which is what I think they should do. Like the first part of the year you try to win with these guys and then you see where you're at come February. And if you're not close to a playoff spot, you sort of just try to get what you can for the veteran guys.
Yeah, this will be interesting. How do you think Zion does? I think that's what everyone actually wants to know. I think he's going to be good, but not great. He'll be an average rookie.
Similar I think he's going to struggle in his first year.
I think he'll be like Ayton last year. Like Ayton had a pretty good year, but just obviously
Ayton was super efficient. I don't think Zion's going to be as efficient as a lot of people think he's going to be.
Why?
He's going to have a lot of problems once teams like pack the paint on him because he's starting next to Favors and Ingram, right? There's not a lot of spacing there.
Nope.
So unless you start Zion later in the year at center or you put a shooter around him, like the guy they signed from Europe, Melli, is supposed to be a shooter, so maybe you play him with Zion a lot more to give him more space on pick and rolls and stuff. But with their current starting line, especially if they start Ball, like Zion's going to have no room to move around and he's going to have to take a lot more jump shots than he's used to, and I don't think he's anywhere close to where he needs to be with that.
Nope. Maybe you're right. Maybe he will struggle a lot more than I said. Because I thought he would struggle this year, but not to that extent. Like, I think he'll be fine, but not
He's going to be fine in the long run. It's just with the projected starting lineup they have one shooter, right? They have Holiday.
Possibly, yeah.
And then off the bench, you got a lot of guys that can shoot, obviously, so... I think if Zion develops some chemistry, like with Joel Embiid did with J.J. Redick last few years and running those off-the-ball plays, that could be effective. But ultimately, I think he's going to struggle, especially in the early part of the year. And then later on in the year, once he gets like a lot more minutes and a lot more touches, I think he'll be fine.
Yeah. All right.
But he's not going to win Rookie of the Year. Mark it down.
What?
He's not winning Roy.
No.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think so.
No, either. I don't think so.
All right, over under 39, let's go. I'm going under.
Yeah, I'm going to go under.
Yeah, I'm going to say under too.
Wow, that's the first one we all agreed on. No, I lied. We agreed on the Thunder and the Suns. All right.
No. I think the Thunder, you guys had under, didn't you?
Yeah, you also said under.
Did I? I
think Chris Paul's going to get traded.
Yeah, all right. Fair enough.
Sorry, I don't know what you're thinking right now, but as
I changed
of like
my mind
20
already.
Minutes ago. All right. The Dallas Mavericks sitting at 41 wins.
I am very excited about this team. I mean, I already called in the last two
podcasts.
You sound
very excited.
They are 100% making the playoffs this year. So we'll start at their additions. They signed Seth Curry, DeLon Wright, Boban, and Antonius Cleveland. They drafted Isaiah Roby, the number 45 pick in the draft. And unfortunately, they lost legend Dirk Nowitzki, another legend Trey Burke, and Kostas Antetokounmpo. And they re-signed Kristaps for a max contract, and they also re-signed Dorian Finney-Smith and Maxi Kleba.
Okay, going forward, can we not talk about random draft picks like late in the second round?
You don't want to hear about Isaiah Roby?
No. Antonius Cleveland, yes. but not Isaiah Roby.
Fair.
Sorry, man. He's got Antonius Cleveland has a wicked name. Isaiah Roby, not so much.
I'll just announce the guys that have cool names then.
Yeah, yeah. That's all we need.
I'm going to be the first one to rain on Josh's parade. Like, looking at this roster, I think they have, obviously, Luka Doncic, who has an immense amount of talent, and so does Kristaps. But the rest of the roster, I feel, is very bad. I don't think...
Sorry. It's bad.
It's bad. Like, I don't really know where you're going to get consistent production from. And you're really top heavy. Like, you're obviously expecting Doncic and Porzingis to lead the team, and I'm sure they will, but you're expecting them to put up combined like 60 points a game for them to even have a shot at winning most of these games, especially with the NBA totals getting up into like the 105, 110 average. And this roster doesn't have enough talent. Like, they have a lot of fringe players, career fringe players. They don't have any real established starters besides Doncic and Porzingis. And I do not see them getting 41 wins. Sadly, I want Doncic to succeed, but I think they're going to have a worse year than last year, unless they make some trades.
You think they're going to be worse than last year, having Kristaps Porzingis coming back and all these new guys coming in?
Yeah, but they don't have like good proven NBA starters. And I'm not saying you need a lot of them, but like, you have two starters that are like good starters on other teams, and then the rest of the players wouldn't make most NBA starting lineups.
No, but you have two guys that could possibly be top 20 players this year, right? And that's what matters in the NBA. So if Kristaps comes back healthy, and he is even like 90% of what he was in New York on a team that'll actually know how to use him properly. Like, the one thing you're not factoring in here is a coach. Like, if they didn't have Rick Carlisle, I would say, yes, this team's going to go under for sure. But he's made some pretty average to below average Dallas teams and got them into the playoffs in like the latter part of Dirk's career. So I don't know. I think with those two guys and the additions that they made with having shooting around these guys and defensive players, and that should sort of fit around the two guys, like the two main guys, I think it'll work.
No, I'm not saying there's no possibility of it working. I just don't see it happening because you're asking a lot from those two players. And like, name me another player on that team that would be an established starter on most NBA rosters.
An established starter?
Tim Hardaway would probably start on most teams.
Nah, I disagree with that.
No, but like, we may not like him, but you know he would start.
He would start on,
but he starts on a bad team. Sure.
I mean, I see your point, but at the same time, like, they have a lot of room for improvement as well, right? I mean, guys like Jalen Brunson, who had a really good rookie season, and then DeLon Wright, who had a very good second half of the year with Memphis. Like, who's to say that he can't be one of the guys that's in the running for most improved player next year?
No, I'm not saying that. It's like, again, they have good role players, and like, I think DeLon Wright, God bless his soul, he saved my fantasy year. He's a good player. I just don't see them as a team that can compete with the rest of the teams in the West. When these teams have a better, like not better, but a more established identity, you're relying a lot on Kristaps, who's coming off a major injury for a tall player who we've commented before, who has a game that doesn't really match his body type. And I'm sure Doncic is going to step it up, but I really think you need, in this modern day NBA, like, you need a team that's at least six or seven like good players. And I don't see that with this team. I don't think they're going to get 41 wins. I don't think they're going to have a terrible season, but I think they're going to hover around 33 wins again.
Yeah, I sort of agree with you that they don't really have like a lot of established starters. But with this team, you just have to look at them as a bunch of guys that are going to be developing into what they're going to become, right? Like, they're not a finished product, obviously. And I think this year, and having one of the best, three to five coaches in the NBA, I think he's going to be able to mold them and be able to figure out the combinations that work. And he has a lot of options. I mean, their backcourt is pretty loaded, I think, in terms of guys that fit around Doncic. Like, they didn't bring in players that are going to take the ball away from him, but they also have guys that can run like a secondary pick and roll. Like, Seth Curry was really good last year with that. Obviously DeLon Wright, and then Jalen Brunson. And then in the front court, like, Kleba is one of the most unknown players in the NBA that was really good last year. I think he was like second in blocks overall off the bench. And I think he's going to be a good fit next to Kristaps, playing a lot more minutes. The one thing I was sort of curious about, though, is like, even though I love the guy because he is Canadian, but signing Dwight Powell for 3 years, $30 million or something like that, like, I didn't get that.
That was a...
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't think the Mavericks made any bad moves. I just don't think they made enough moves to make them a playoff contender. And I think, obviously, with 41 wins, even if they went slightly over, I don't think they make the playoffs that way. But I really did want them to take big strides, but now looking at their roster from top to bottom, this roster is not a roster that's going to win 41 games. And again, there's a huge like injury cloud over Kristaps. I know he had that one ACL injury, but like I don't think he's going to come back being able to play 40 minutes or 35 minutes a game at like a production of like 25 points per game.
So Vegas has them as the ninth seed right now at 41. Yeah.
I don't see it. 33. That's my pick.
Oh my god, you're crazy.
Yeah. You think they match what they did last year?
Yeah, I do.
Oh god.
You know they tanked the second part of the year, right?
Yeah, but I also think they like overall their team is probably better, but I think the other teams in the West as a whole got better.
I mean, you have one of the most dangerous pick and roll combinations with a wizard of a coach with good supporting players. I think that is a recipe for a good team, and I'm going way over. I'm going to go like 45-46.
Yeah, I'm going 43-44.
Oh, wow.
I think all these role players step up, aside from Dwight Powell.
It's asking a lot.
And the role players are going to have an easy time because you have these two guys who create so much attention. Like, people just forget how good Porzingis is, and I think he's going to come back strong this year. And having him play center with Rick Carlisle's offense and what he already did with Dirk, and Porzingis is a much better defensive player. He's obviously not the offensive wizard that Dirk was, but you put him with Doncic in a pick and roll, he's going to have so many more open shots than he did with New York, where he had to do a lot off the dribble. And he's just going to be super efficient this year, I think.
Moving on. Hey guys, just a quick editor's note. This episode ran a little long, so we had to split it into two parts. So you'll be able to find part two in your app right after this one. Thanks, see ya.